This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Friday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. We got lots to go over. A lot of great games last night. I was flat out wrong about the Leafs and the Golden Knights in this one. My ice picks were the Knights on the money line and the over at 6.5. I couldn't have been more wrong. I thought with Subban between the pipes for the Golden Knights that maybe he'd give up a few, but I still thought in the wild game the Golden Knights would win. But this was tight checking. This was physical. This was fun. Not a lot of opportunities, not a lot of shots on goal. Golden Knights took the 1-0 lead on a nice rebound goal by Pacioretty. But then Toronto ties the game up. Auston Matthews, midway through the third period, his 13th goal of the year on the power play. And then John Tavares cashes in at 2:33 in overtime, and the Leafs get the win. Boy, that would be a fun Stanley Cup final if it ever happened between the Leafs and the Golden Knights. Panthers blow a 3-1 lead at home, lose to the Capitals by the final score of 5-4 in overtime. And disappointing for the Panthers, obviously blowing the lead. They've had a tendency to do that. Again, they've got 5 overtime losses are in the shootout. They're 7-3-5. So technically they've been under 500. So their record's kind of misleading because they've had a lot of blown opportunities. Remember they had that lead in Calgary in a third period. They came back. They took the lead late only to blow it. Eventually, they would lose that game in overtime. But the Capitals get a couple of goals from Alexander Ovechkin. Now 671 goals in his National Hockey League career, but Tom Wilson gets the game tire and the game winner in overtime as the Capitals continue to march. Will they be in the top five? Will they be number one in the top five this week for Friday? We'll have to wait and see on that. Islanders, they're poised. They're going to win their 11th consecutive game. They're home. They're up 3-0 on the Penguins. They're outplaying the Penguins. And I was a little surprised by it because I figured, you know, Pittsburgh's going to have a spur up there, you know what, because of what happened last year, getting swept in the series and the first meeting and all that. And, you know, it's Cizikas and Clutterbuck, all the guys that you really kind of need the Islanders to be well-rounded and contribute, or contributing. And Pellick gets the goal, his first of the year, too, to make it 3-0 midway through the second period. And they take that lead into the third. And then McCann scores early, 1:38. Okay, no big deal. You didn't expect to shut Pittsburgh out. Brian Rust gets his third at 6:16. Now you're a little nervous. You're not even halfway through the third period yet, and all of a sudden it's a one-goal lead. And then a couple of minutes later, Malkin on a rebound ties the game. So you're not even halfway through the third period. Poof, the lead's gone. Give the Islanders credit, though. They sustain. They call a timeout. They hang on. They get the point in overtime, which is good. Let's not forget that. It's about collecting points. Win streaks are fun and all that, but you don't want to lose and lose points. But then they get to overtime, and then Rust gets his second of the game, his fourth of the year, 3:25 in overtime. So a tough way to lose your losing streak for sure, because you had the big lead. You were at home. But when you allow the dust to settle and the disappointment of not winning your 11th in a row, you still got a point. You're still 11-3-1. Islanders are still in very good shape. You just don't want that one to fester and give it back by losing 4 of the next 5 games. Flyers with a nice win over the Montreal Canadiens, 3-2. Another game that goes into overtime. Philip Myers gets his first of the year. Van Riemsdyk gets his fourth early in the second period, 49 seconds in. Ben Chiarot makes it 2-1 with a goal at 13:44. Shea Weber ties it early in the third, but then Sean Couturier wins it early in overtime. Montreal's played well. I mean, that's a nice road win. You can look at it and say, well, Montreal should win those types of games. Hey, they went in with the same record, and Montreal's been good. They're collecting points. So that's not a bad road point to get if you're Montreal, considering the fact that you were trailing in that game and you came back to tie it. So I think you kind of live with it. Rangers, how about them? Surprised the Hurricanes 4-2, but the Hurricanes have now lost 3 in a row. Lost to New Jersey, Philadelphia, and the Rangers. So 3 consecutive losses, 3 consecutive losses in the Metropolitan Division. So things starting to slow down here. Mrazek had a 15-game winning streak at home. That was snapped. And give credit to the Rangers. They had played the night before against Detroit. They were completely outplayed in the first period. They were outshot 22-6 in the first period. And they just looked like a team that got into Carolina late, from what I understand. I called the game against Detroit, but I didn't go with them to Carolina. They didn't get into town until 2 o'clock in the morning. So you figure by the time you check into the hotel, a head hits pillow at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And then you got to play a game. Remember, that was an 8 o'clock start Eastern time at the Garden. And then you got a 7 o'clock start the next day in Carolina. Carolina's a quick flight, less than an hour, but still it's a pain in the neck. And it showed, but the Rangers held. Henrik Lundqvist does a great job keeping them in the game. They got outshot in the second period as well. But they kept finding ways to take the lead. You know, Panarin scores late in the first period. So despite being outshot 22-6, Rangers had the 1-0 lead. Dougie Hamilton, who's probably been the best offensive defenseman in the league outside of John Carlson, gets his 7th of the year, ties it at 1. But then Brendan Lemieux gets a power play goal, his first of the year, and his first ever power play goal of his career, deflection less than 2 minutes to play in the second period, gives the Rangers, who were outplayed, a lead in the third, and then the Rangers add to that lead and eventually win the game by the final score of 4-2. And the narrative on Henrik Lundqvist has changed quite a bit here. I'm close to it because I cover the team. You guys know that. Well, Georgiev played 3 straight games. Georgiev has played better than Hank. They've got minor league goaltenders that are ready to come up here. Hank's only got a year left on his contract after this, which makes him very movable during the offseason. Maybe we're seeing the latter stages here of Hank, and maybe he's just going to be a backup goaltender this year. Georgiev is going to take over, and this is what Hank is going to be the rest of the year. And boy, how that changed in less than 24 hours, right? Makes 35 saves in the 5-1 win against Detroit. All right, Detroit's not very good. I get it, but I thought Hank played well. And a good job out of David Quinn. He decides, you know what, I'm going to go with a hunch. I'm going to play Hank back-to-back. He'd only played 7 games. He certainly wasn't exhausted at all by any stretch of the imagination, and he steals the game for them. I mean, the Rangers were outchanced in this one. I think the final numbers were like 89-38. It was ridiculous when you combine the shots on goal, block shots by the Rangers, and the shots that Hurricanes missed. 89 shot attempts to the Rangers 38. I mean, they should have lost the game, but Hank stole it for him. So all of a sudden you feel different. So maybe David rides the hot hand and gives him a chance to play against Florida on Sunday afternoon. Hank is now just 1 win away from Curtis Joseph for 5th all-time in victories. So I don't think he's going to be catching, at least this year, Eddie Belfour for 4th or Roberto Luongo for 3rd, because those guys are in the 480s. But still, I think by the time his career is over, I think he will sit 3rd behind Patrick Waugh and Martin Brodeur for wins in a career. But that's nice feel for Hank and a good win for the Rangers, who climb above 500 at 7-6-1. Senators beat the Kings by the final score of 3-2. Two teams that are an also-ran. But Ottawa's actually played pretty decently, right? They beat the Rangers at Madison Square Garden. They did lose to the Islanders, but they come back home, beat the Los Angeles Kings. And Jean-Gabriel Pageau has actually played very well for Ottawa. He scored his 7th goal of the year, and that came 3-12 into overtime for Ottawa, who gets the win. Nice win for the Blackhawks. Canucks come in red hot. But the Blackhawks, who have really been struggling, win at home. Kane has a goal in this one. DeBrinket gets a goal as well. He has his 5th of the season. Sod, so pretty well rounded. So that's a nice win for Chicago. Vancouver, as I said, been coming in hot, looking for their 10th victory of the season, but they lose 5-2. How about the Avalanche? This is a crazy game. Avalanche beat the Predators 9-4. I mean, how often do you see a team score 9 goals, 6 goals in the third period? I mean, just a ridiculous amount of goals. So 8 goals combined for the two teams in the third period. So if you had the over in that one, and I'm not sure what it was, I'm assuming it was like 6.5, you were feeling good going into the third period of that one. But just look at the numbers for Colorado in this one as far as points are concerned. And they spread it out pretty well. I mean, for 9 goals scored, nobody had more than 4 points. Nate McKinnon had 1 goal and 3 assists for 4 points. Calvert had 2 points. Donskoy had 3 points. Nieto had 2 points. Barakovsky had 3 points. Makar had 3 points. Graves had 3 points. Johnson had 2 points. So, boy, they really spread the wealth there. And, you know, you're obviously playing without Landeskog. You're obviously playing without Rantanen. Going up against a pretty good Nashville team, pretty good defensive team as well. And you put up 9 goals in a 9-4 win. Flames with a nice win as well. They're getting hot again. They've got 10 wins. Now, they played more games than anybody else in the league. So I think that kind of doctors up the standings just a little bit. But this was an interesting one. It was back and forth early. Jack Hughes gets his 4th. fourth to give the Devils a 1-0 lead after one. Ryan scores his third to tie it, but then the Devils come back just a little over 2 minutes later as Gusev gets his fourth to give the Devils the lead back. But then three unanswered goals by Calgary. Monahan, his fourth. Backlund scores for the first time in a while, his third. Hanifin, who had a great night, his third. And then Johnny Gaudreau put the icing on the cake midway through the third period to make it a 5-2 game. He's kind of been struggling a little bit, but had a big game last night. So a good job out of the Calgary Flames. And I mentioned Hanifin played very well for the Flames, a goal and two assists, so a three-point night from the defense. Matter of fact, there were four defenders that had points in the game last night. Stone had a point, Brody had a point, Anderson had a point as well. So nice win for the Calgary Flames over the New Jersey Devils. We'll have to play the second of back-to-backs tonight in Edmonton. Blue Jackets get a must-win as they beat the Coyotes 3-2. That was kind of a surprise. Corpusalo makes 30 saves in that one, as Nyquist gets a goal, as well as Benstrom and Bjorkstrand, who had the game-winning goal that came midway through the third period. So that slows down the Coyotes just a bit. And a wild one, no pun intended, between the Wild and the Sharks. And the Sharks, this one, 6-5. Again, a battle of also-rans, but you're home, you got to beat the Wild. And the Wild's got to be kicking themselves, right? I mean, this is a team that when they score five goals, they're usually going to win the game and they still lose, but they didn't do themselves any favors as the Sharks scored four unanswered in the first period. And then the Wild come back. They get a goal in the second to cut it to 4-1, but then Hurdle gets his sixth to make it 5-1. But give the Wild credit. They didn't go away. Stahl makes it 5-2 with his sixth, but then Evander Kane, a lot of controversy around him. We talked about it before. Power play goal makes it 6-2. But again, the Wild will not go away. Hunt, Donato, Zucker score goals, three consecutive. Zucker's call game at 15:25, so there was still time to possibly get the game tire. Couldn't do it. So a spirited effort for the Wild, but the Sharks hold on. Wild now 5-10-1 on the year. Sharks also with 10 losses, but they got one more win at 6. All right, tonight, very interesting game between the Lightning and the Sabres. When are the Lightning going to start waking things up? This is a 2 o'clock game. Game's in Sweden. I guess we'll find out at some point what the status is going to be of Victor Hedman, and it looks like he is going to play. So that game is going to be a 2 o'clock Eastern time start. Many of you who listen to this podcast, this game may already be over or going on. They're going to play the home-and-home in Sweden, and the Sabres, Lightning, that should be a pretty good one. Maybe this is where the Tampa Bay Lightning kind of get things going a little bit. Bruins, after a tough loss to Montreal, begin Detroit to take on the Red Wings. That is a tough spot for Detroit. I mean, Detroit's banged up with injuries. We'll see if Nielsen plays. He was a late scratch against the Rangers because he blocked a shot in Nashville back on Monday. You're playing without Green, which really affects their power play. So that is a very, very difficult spot for the Detroit Red Wings at home against the Boston Bruins. Canucks, the second of back-to-backs, they'll be in Winnipeg to take on the Jets. And as I mentioned, the Devils in the second of back-to-backs will be in Edmonton to take on the Oilers. It's Friday, and you know what Friday means.
Don LaGreca's Friday Top 5.
Yeah! Always, always tough to do the top five, especially this early in the season. But I went over it earlier today, really trying to figure out how I'm going to play all this out here, because there's just a lot of good hockey being played. And quite frankly, there's a lot of bad hockey. But you know what? When you're doing the top five, you don't have to worry about that. So let's start with number five.
Number five.
I've got the Edmonton Oilers at five. They sit fifth in the National Hockey League, but, you know, plus two goal differential, which isn't bad considering how they started the season. They're pretty even home and road. 5-2-1 at home, 5-3-1 on the road. Best combination in the National Hockey League between Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So Edmonton coming off a tough loss to the St. Louis Blues, but I thought they played well in that game. That game was 5-2, but there was a couple of empty netters late. That game was pretty competitive. I think Edmonton can feel pretty good about the way they played against the defending Stanley Cup champion, so I think the Edmonton Oilers are well-deserved to be in the top five at five.
Number four.
Number four, we're going to go with the ever-popular Washington Capitals. Now, the Capitals are 8-1-1, are 9-0-1 in their last 10. They've played tremendous. They played 17 games, so of the teams that are in the top five, they've played right there tied for the most. I think that's also led to why they're the best in the National Hockey League with 27 points, with St. Louis with 25. But Boston's got two games in hand. The Islanders got two games in hand. So I think that's why I've got Washington at four. But they're playing some unbelievable hockey. Ovechkin has been absolutely terrific. This is a tremendous, tremendous hockey team for sure, and well-deserved at number four.
Number three.
We're going to go with the St. Louis Blues, the defending Stanley Cup champions. Again, 5-1-2 at home, 6-2-1 on the road, so there doesn't seem to be any changes there. They've won six in a row, 8-2 in their last 10. Binnington's beginning to show people that he's for real, that last year was not a fluke. They've survived the injury to Tarasenko. If they continue to play this way, I don't think they're going to make a trade, but if they do make a trade, they could be even better, and I think they sit there at number three.
Number two.
Despite their loss last night, they did still earn a point. So let's look at the New York Islanders at number two. They're 9-0-1 in their last 10. 10 consecutive wins before the loss last night. So that's points in 11 straight games. They've played without Eberle, right? So they've had some injuries that they've had to deal with, but they've overcome those injuries. They're well-rounded offensively. It doesn't matter who's in goal during the 10-game winning streak. Grice had 5 wins. Varlamov had 5 wins. When this team gets healthy, they could be even better. They've bought in. As I mentioned, they sit fourth in the league with 23 points, and they're second in the Metropolitan Division with 23, 4 points back of Washington, but they have 2 games in hand on the Capitals. So that's why it's a little deceiving here when you look at the standings, because there's such a disparity between games played with everyone, but I think the Islanders well deserved at number two.
Number one.
They did suffer the loss in Montreal, but I'm telling you, there is no one close right now to the Boston Bruins. I would not be surprised if throughout the year, when we do the top five, that we're going to talk about the Boston Bruins in similar fashion that we talked about the Tampa Bay Lightning last year. They're a plus 20 goal differential. No one else is really close, okay? They've yet to lose a regulation game at home. They've got the best line in hockey. Pastrnak leads the league in goals. Bergeron and Marchand are unbelievable. Chara's been rejuvenated playing with a healthy McAvoy. They've got depth as Krejci's come back from his injury. DeBrusque has been very good for them as well. I mean, there's hardly a weakness on this team. Tuukka Rask is obviously a Stanley Cup caliber goaltender. Halak has been very good as his backup. I'm hard-pressed to see if there's anyone really that can touch the Boston Bruins at this point. So let's close out the Friday edition with your tweets at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Let's go to Troy. He's got a few here. Just wanted to get your thoughts on whether Chicago's Brent Seabrook can be traded to New Jersey. Devils have cap space and needs better D, and Chicago seems desperate to get his contract off their books. Not sure what the Devils can swing back to make it appealing for Chicago. And I think that's the problem. I mean, what are you going to give up if you're the Devils? Are you giving up draft choices? I don't know if they have an appetite for that. The Hall situation kind of makes things interesting. Are the Devils in rebuild, or are the Devils going to try to squeeze something out of this? They've had played better lately. It's an interesting matchup because it's certainly a need for the Devils, but I'm with you, Troy. I'm not really sure exactly what you would have to give up. Troy continues, wanted to chime in about favorite all-time Rangers goalies. Mine is Richter. He was athletic and one of the few who effectively used stand-up style when majority of his peers were switching to butterfly. Not my favorite NHL goalie, but still inspirational. Okay, very good. David chimes in. During your time doing Ranger games, have you ever had anything similar to the black cat at the Giants game last week? If not an animal, any unusual disruptions? Also, for guest suggestions, I'd throw out Kenny Albert, Barry Melrose, and maybe getting Rick DiPietro on again. Well, DiPietro, we've had on before. Melrose is certainly doable. He works for the company, and I always love talking to Kenny Albert for sure, although the guy is the busiest man on the face of the earth. Probably the biggest disruption for me that I can think of off the top of my head, and it didn't involve the Rangers, was that conference final game between the Bruins and the Rangers and the Devils back in 88, when the officials refused to work the game because Jim Schoenfeld was able to get a court order to not get suspended for the eat another donut fat boy comment to Don Kolharski. In case you're not familiar with the story, Devils lose a really bad game. I think it might have been game two in Boston, or it might have been game three in New Jersey. I'm trying to remember. I was at these games, but I don't remember exactly the game. I'm sure I'll be reminded on Twitter. And they get blown out. He didn't like the officiating, Jim Schoenfeld, and he confronted Don Kolharski after the game. Kolharski slipped on the padding going to the locker room, and he thought mistakenly that Jim Schoenfeld had tripped him. And they went at it. Eat another donut, fat boy, was kind of the paraphrased quote from Jim Schoenfeld. He got caught. Remember, ABC7 in New York actually got the video of it. You see a very young Larry Brooks in the video, and the NHL suspended Jim Schoenfeld for the next game. Well, Lou Lamoriello was able to get a judge in New Jersey to get the suspension waived, or at least put it into a hearing where he'd be available to coach the next game. Well, the officials, feeling that that was wrong, refused to do the game. And I remember being at the Meadowlands for the game, and there's being this long delay. And this was before cell phones and being able to get updates. And finally, word started going through the crowd that the referees were protesting the game. So they had to actually pull amateur officials. I remember they were like wearing like raincoats, like yellow raincoats to distinguish them on the ice. And they were like minor league officials, and they were guys that knew the game, but they weren't actual NHL officials, and they actually worked the game. And the thing that I remember most about that whole situation and how it would never happen today was the then president of the National Hockey League, this was before the title was commissioner, was John Ziegler, who just recently passed away. He wasn't available. He was on vacation in Switzerland, I mean, or Sweden, or wherever he was. He was in Europe. How are you on vacation during a conference final? There's four teams left in the NHL, for God's sakes. But they couldn't reach him, and it was just a big debacle. Devils ended up, I believe they were winning that game. They ended up losing game seven to Boston, and Boston went ahead and went to the Stanley Cup final, eventually losing to the Edmonton Oilers. But just a great that, – that's one that kind of just jumps out at me at that point. James White says, I don't understand why NBA players like Kawhi need load management. I'm pretty sure I watched Patrice Pasta and Marshawn go back-to-back this week. I'm hoping you can walk me off the ledge of outage with your journalistic objectivity. outrage, excuse me, with journalistic objectivity. I think it's a joke. I mean, I think it's a joke what's happening in the NBA with the load management. It's such a star-driven sport. So when you don't see those guys out there, it affects the ratings. It affects the popularity of the sport. But let's face it, even though the NBA has become a little bit more even, where you see you have more and more teams now up for the championship now, not like it was the last couple of years where it was always Golden State playing Cleveland in the NBA Finals. Still, you kind of know it's between six or seven teams that are going to win the championship, so the meaning of the regular season probably isn't there. I mean, it drives me crazy when people are like, oh, the regular season's meaningless in the NHL. What a joke. I mean, it's the same format the NBA has, and the NBA's got guys missing games because they are meaningless, and I think they're more meaningful in the NHL. I mean, ask Montreal and Arizona last year if they wished that the regular season was meaningless. I mean, they almost made the playoffs. The 82 games were not enough for them. So we got to stop with that whole theory. And no, I don't see it. I've seen three games in four nights. I see back-to-backs. I do not see load management issues in the NHL where the game is as tough to play as anyone. So it does bother me, and I think it's absolutely ridiculous. David says, I'll be in section 420, row 5, for Sunday's Tilt versus Florida. Can you stop by? I will definitely try to stop by, but I'll ask you this, David. Make sure you tweet me that on Sunday, because going back through the mentions, I might not be able to find it. So definitely do that, because I would love to be able to swing by and say hello. And I do that as often as possible. There have been a few people I haven't been able to get to. When I'm calling a game, sometimes it's difficult, as opposed to when I'm pre and post, and I can hustle around during the course of the game. So if I don't get there, I apologize, but I will make every effort. Ozzy says, so at what point is not already do you begin to worry about your season if you're the Sharks? Their depth is worrisome, and they no longer have pieces to trade for upgrades. Lastly, should they fall to a lottery position, Ottawa, ironically, has their first pick. Yeah, it's a mess. And that's why I just wonder, we talked about this with EJ back on Monday, even though it probably isn't his fault, do you just let DeBoer go just because it's something that you can do? But I think they're well past the point of panic. I mean, they're one of the worst teams in the NHL, and I don't know if it's going to get any better for them. And this whole idea, we talk about this all the time, well, the St. Louis Blues did it last year, that's an outlier. You cannot expect every year that to happen. Now, I do think there's talent there, but you're also seeing a lot of problems that they had last year with the goaltending. So I'm not sure they're going to be able to get up from this at all. Joe said, what a great game for Hank stealing that one. Do you know if teams from the West in past years have inquired about him? I know he has a no trade in his contract, but there are so many teams in the West that are, in my opinion, need a goalie away. Hank's not going to allow himself to be traded. He's got the no movement clause. I don't think he's going anywhere. And he's also making a lot of money, which is a major hit to the cap. So it's not just a case of, can there be a team that can acquire him? Can they fit him under the salary cap? And will he want to go? I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sure that whether it was Jeff Gordon a couple of years ago, John Davidson now, I'm sure there are phone calls being placed to acquire Hank. Let's see here. Nick says, Don, I was at the game last night, and that was about the ugliest win I've seen. I'll take a win any way possible, but do you think that was a hangover from playing Detroit Wednesday night? Also, Fox and D'Angelo quickly becoming the blue line guys. They are definitely becoming the blue line guys. And something I should mention about the Ranger game, Brady Shea, a healthy scratch. So there's some depth there for the Rangers, and coach sending a message that, hey, you need a little bit more out of Shea the way you've gotten it from Fox and D'Angelo. I blame everything last night on the fact that they played the night before. I've made that trip. It's hard. I remember, last year, early in the year, the Rangers played a Saturday game in Buffalo. I called it. And then after the game, we flew to Raleigh for a Sunday game. And it was a disaster because it's so hard. Raleigh's close, but I'm telling you, and listen, nobody's ever going to feel bad for me or the players. You get to go on a charter. They feed you. It's great, but it's still time and you still have to go through the bus ride from the example on Wednesday, they're home. So they flew out of Newark. All right. So the game ends and you're usually wheels up maybe an hour 15 after the game is over. So you go through the media and everything. That game ended, close to 11 o'clock. They probably didn't get wheels up until about 12:30. Once they bus over to Newark and they go through, it's not the same security they go through if it's a commercial flight, but you still got to go through that, get on the plane takes off. And it's another half hour, 45 minutes sometimes from the airport to whatever hotel the Rangers are staying at in Raleigh. They didn't get home until 2 o'clock in the morning. All right. Because again, it's an 8 o'clock start, not a 7 o'clock start. So you're getting in real late. There's no practice. There's no morning skate. You kind of just get to the arena and you play. And Carolina, who's a good team, even though they're coming off a couple of losses in a row, they're sitting there waiting for you. That's exactly what happened. But you know what? Sometimes you got to win those types of games. And that's exactly what they did. Robert, to close it out, says, last night was one of the best games I've seen Hank play, and I've watched him play for 15 years. There must be wanted posters with his picture in Raleigh for stealing that game. Absolutely, but you got to do it. I mean, I don't know if the Rangers are, at the end of the day, are going to be a playoff team. If I had to guess, I would say no, but they don't feel that way. They're going to try to make the playoffs. Those are games where, you know what, you don't have it that night. It's not working out for you. But you got a goaltender, and that's the great equalizer. And boy, does it change the narrative on Hank. People are looking at Henrik Lundqvist a little differently than they were going into that game Wednesday against Detroit, where he went from what's going on with Hank? Is he ever going to play? Is he the backup to now? Like he's stealing his crown back here at the latter stages of his career. And we'll see if he plays. And Rangers got a tough schedule coming up. They've got Florida at home on Sunday afternoon. Tuesday, they're at home against Pittsburgh. Thursday, they go to Tampa. Saturday, they're going to be back in Florida again to take on the Panthers. So very good teams the rest of the way here, and we'll see what the Rangers can do. But that was a good team they beat last night in Carolina. So good Friday, good close to the week. We got a big weekend. I'll be on that call, Rangers and the Panthers on Sunday afternoon, 12:30 coverage on 98.7, or we'll actually be on 10:50 because the Giant game will be on. But just check your local listings for that one if you want to hear it. Back with you again on Monday. We'll recap the weekend with EJ Raddick. Thanks for joining us here on a Friday. Have some fun. Enjoy it. Be safe. Back with you again on Monday. This was the Friday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.